Hello, and welcome back to our podcast about a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic Wakeland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. I'm joined again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
That would be Sir Weirdington Esquire.
I only messed up one word in the opening this time. Fantastic.
You also forgot to introduce yourself as Fi.
I'm never going to do it. It's never going to happen. I'm always going to botch something. Oh, man. Hi. Hey, we're back again, folks. We made it. We're doing the thing again. Cool. We're not dead yet. After last week's recording, I kind of ran the numbers, and I had a big think about it. And I realized that, like, the next handful of episodes are going to be two-parters up until chapter 16, because the episode lengths won't be long enough to be like a full episode, because there just isn't enough pages in one given episode. But two episodes is slightly too long, so like more content is generally always considered better in a podcast format. So here we are. I don't think people will complain too much about having more podcasts to listen to each week for the next couple of weeks. But then after that, like after chapter 16, which is the end of the first book as well, so we might do something special for that, I don't know what. After that, like 17 onwards, chapters get noticeably longer, so there's just generally more to talk about, and we'll be able to switch back to a structure. And every now and then, we'll probably do at least one or two episodes that are probably double chapter episodes, just because they're either kind of short or they just kind of fit better together as two episodes. But for now, hey, look forward to more content.
All right, so to recap last episode... last episode was our first double bill. In the first episode, we had a dungeon crawl, had sort of a very weird kind of system shock sort of a thing. Oh wait, okay. To set up our crew of three ponies are taking on mercenary jobs in order to earn enough money. Wait a minute, what are they trying to gather the funds for?
They need the money so they can unlock the encrypted file, the Maltese.exe, EC1101, which doesn't roll off the tongue, so that's why we make fun of it.
All right. They need to be able to get enough bottle caps to pay a hackerman to decrypt the Maltese.exe so they can find out why they're being hunted for it in the first place. And one of their jobs is to clear out squatters in a hospital.
Ugh.
And so
slimy.
Turns out the bounty was put out by some literal plantation owning slaver southern style aristocrats. And the squatters they want killed are research scientists trying to salvage life-saving equipment from the depths of a hospital. Our profoundly amoral heroes more or less agree to this, but decide to split the difference by first talking to their would-be murder victims, who are with a faction called the Collegiate, I recall. And... Yep. The slave aristocrats want to get to the thing that the scientists are salvaging first. God knows how they'll know how to even operate it.
Yeah, who knows?
Because they want to save the life of one of their elder members, some hideous gargoyle who should have died a long time ago, but they insist on preserving this person's life. with the power of super science. So the party goes down there, talks to them, finds out that, well, it's on the other side of, like, some sort of death gauntlet. So we haven't even gotten it yet. And sure, if you the adventurers, the player characters, can go in there and like actually get access to it, fine. We're fine using it on whoever.
Yeah.
If your end goal is getting the thing, we'll give them access to the thing. Jesus. But first, you've got to run the Death Gauntlet for us. Like that's the deal.
We already did it once. We're not doing it again.
You take on all the risk, and fine, we'll be happy to like share around the reward. And so what the party finds when they go in is an AI mimicking sort of like children's games, but with a Saw twist. And so like life or death, after like a game of life or death, red light, green light, and a few other things. Dr. Professor Scientist Gloria is left for dead, and they eventually find that this laboratory had been conducting pseudo cryogenic storage, like just preserving somebody who like it's just a tank that keeps you from dying, and so there are a bunch of small, very small child ponies who suffered from a variety of illnesses that they were just keeping in storage with their minds in a dreamlike awareness, and for some inexplicable reason plugged into the controlling mainframe of the complex.
Yeah. How could this possibly go wrong?
They have gone mad over time and crave only death. Blackjack is presented with a decision of end their suffering, like turn the machines off and allow them to like finally have peace, or like open them and like let them out finally. But that also is presented as a certain death, because like they're like sickly and would almost never survive the like incredible harshness of the world outside their complex, like the wasteland would probably claim them immediately, because the average standard for a small child is they're crusaders. So like they're not good for like brutal mercenary work with an implicit religious bent. Like so they would almost certainly die. The premise of we let them out, adopt them, and like help the collegiate like raise them and like treat them here inside this like phase safe bunkered facility is not presented as even conceptually an option, and so with the like artificial binary presented to her, Blackjack resolves for the more humane solution of just letting them go to sleep. Yes. And never wake up. And for this, she is, of course, is P21 the stag who's never right? Does he actively shame her for this decision? I can't remember.
No, they kind of do like the bizarre like cop out of like, you know, you didn't like no one could make this choice, but like also like it's still the burden is on you. Like is the weird like way it's framed, it's very odd. Like it's no one outright says, oh, this is your fault, but also like you were the tiebreaker, because like one side fell on save them, the other side fell on like mercy kill them, and she broke the tie, so it's her fault by doing that, essentially.
Great. Dr. Professor Scientist tumbles out of a air vent.
I like that fine. She's gaining more. She's getting more like adds to her profession. Doctor, professor, scientist, MD. She's gonna be a dentist at some point.
Well, fundamentally, she's an engineer. Like she's like
yeah,
MD, PhD, PhMD. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's the end of that episode. One positive thing to say about it is that like. I don't know how positive a thing to say about it. It is, but the Sombra does a pretty classic tearjerker move, like you know, emotionally exploitative. Like as the children like slowly their brains suffocate to death in their tubes, they sing a lullaby.
Yeah.
then in the next episode, we finally come back to the Mega Mart on the outskirts of Footsville. Whereupon a series of deeply disappointing things happen.
Yep.
So Blackjack's legend has grown, and tries to talk with Bottlecap, the chief manager of the Mega Mart. Who rules Mega Mart?
The assistant manager
rules Bartertown. So Bottlecap does something. Said like, there's a very weird exchange with Bottlecap, wherein, hey, I'm uncomfortable with this hero worship. Bottlecap responds, yes, you should be. Heroes are a lie. Everyone, like, ultra libertarian individuality is correct. Everyone should be their own hero in their lives, which, to my mind, paints her as an incredibly shitty capitalist, because the thing you should do with somebody with a startling reputation is harvest them. because reputation is like everything, especially supposedly to like that worldview. And then goes on to confess that, oh, by the way, I received my position and my control over this entire facility by way of inheritance. I have two sisters who are rivaling with me individual sectors of our inherited wealth. For some reason of culture, I can't be seen to be directly competing with them, and so I'm want to hire you as a deniable asset to go mess with their respective financial empires.
Yeah, they're specialty in trade, one of which is drugs and sex peddling, and the other one being the slave trade. By the way, I looked into it. It is absolutely definitely usury. That's the name they're going for with the slaver pony. Usury, and then caprice, as in capricious, for the sex trade pony.
Great. And with the name Bottlecap, like, it's a cute sounding name, but effectively, her name is the Benjamins.
Yeah, my name is Cash Money, and I'm here to steal your dollars.
Oh no, I'm here to acquire your dollars in equitable trade.
I wish we caught on that earlier.
Oh, I did. I just didn't. I just, like, saving it for today.
Sorry, I guess I didn't catch on to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so now, henceforth, Cash Money runs Mega Mart. Anyways, sorry.
So yeah, Cash Money explains that, libertarian, make your own way. By the way, I'm an aristocrat who is like, inherited everything I own, which might explain why I have no idea how to like cultivate reputations or exploit like heroes for marketing. So yeah, go do my bidding. But yeah, if anybody asks you, you're not doing my bidding. I will deny you.
I have disavowal.
So Blackjack goes back onto the main floor of the marketplace of the Mega Mart. And is immediately strangled by Uniquizzling. They come back again, apparently profoundly ungrateful for like being alive.
Yeah.
And Deus comes marching up and begins bragging about all the torture he's going to do, just sort of incidental to extracting the Blackjack's pip buck for the Maltese EXE. When Blackjack does something clever, finally, and activate one of the saddle guns attached to Immortan Pony's side, this puts a hole in the ceiling, and gun, praise gun, finally!
Praise be to the gun, as it
finally reveals itself to be a paper tiger.
Yeah.
Much to my surprise that I was assuming that gun, praise be gun, was in order to fulfill its function, was like a suppression weapon, was some sort of Gatling gun that would like lay a spread of bullets down and like with the goal of getting everybody's heads down so they would shut up and immediately cease any any sort of conflict, but in fact it was far too phallic for that. So the sky penis lets loose firing two steel I-beams at Deus that hurts him not a meaningful amount, ceases to do anything, resulting in a massive firefight that almost certainly, that it would be a bizarre miracle if it didn't maim and kill numerous bystanders and destroy like hundreds or thousands of bottle caps worth of merchandise.
No. This is a fanfic. Everyone just quietly picked up all their stuff and moved to the sides so they could have their gunfight in the middle of the room. That's what happened.
I guess moved it to there's like a basement door under each and every like booth like in this indoor flea market. Fine. But the seekers or collectors, what's the name of the organization that runs?
The Finders.
The Finders.
The Finders.
The Finders Keepers mobilize their troops, and both sides cease fire. Deus offers to pay for Blackjack's safety. The offer is refused, and so Deus instead puts the money on a bounty on Blackjack. The stakes are raised.
Mm-hmm. But not really.
Not meaningfully.
Yeah.
Because why wasn't that already a thing? Well, I mean, the only guess I can take is that like it would make them look weak. Like that, like this mm-hmm. is a group of like literally rabid like monster people and like raiders. So like
the idea that they couldn't do it themselves would be like a great shame to their pony murder clan or whatever.
Yeah, you'd think. But apparently Deus is hot-headed enough that like he is willing to take that kind of disgrace. And then he wanders out without any meaningful consequences for, again, almost certainly an awful lot of incidental maimings and the destruction of thousands of bottle caps worth of merchandise.
No one was harmed, especially not the property.
In a wild gunfight wherein one side has like a weapon to surpass Metal Gear. That's one of the involved parties. I don't know about you, but my suspension of disbelief is totally totally destroyed. But they'd like cash money, her entire reputation and career should be dust now. Like then she
yes.
should
be done. Yeah. No. Melgamart should be over right here. The nap has been broken. It's been revealed to be a paper tiger. None of this matters. This is not a safe place to do trade anymore. Get fucked. You like nepotized little brat.
But nope. It's fine. Everyone understands.
Yep, totally fine.
Everyone's completely chill with the idea that at any time Deus can like walk into this like flea market that's supposed to be a safe area and just kidnap you. Like have an underling yep. strangle you and then take you away to do whatever the hell yes. he wants.
Yep, with the specific knowledge that this area is supposed to be a neutral ground for all factions, and it isn't the moment someone tries something. Well, I think that about does it for the recap, at the very least. Since a lot of these early chapters just kind of like end, like there's very little like lead into another chapter in a lot of these early chapters. So like that happens, and then it just kind of like. On to next chapter, but yeah. But before we move on to today's, you know, we're 20 minutes in, and today's is adventure. We should probably go over the perks that Blackjack has earned over the last two chapters, since this is a video game disguised as a fan fiction. Apparently,
it's a design doc for a video game.
The worst video game ever. But yeah, in chapter 6, after. Murdering a bunch of ponies and singing funny sing songs, she gains the perk Foal at Heart, so she has new dialogue options available to her for children, which is a bizarre thing to make diegetic. Like, you'd think like characters would just have the ability to talk to children, but no, apparently you need a special perk, or you just can't help but like talk down to childs. And in chapter 7, she gains the stare, which is a reference to the show, and she just is better at intimidating folks, especially if she has a gun in telekinetic hand, because of that moment where she went to shoot that slaver and then couldn't actually shoot the slaver and like fired her bullets into the air, all Point Break style.
Oh, I'd forgotten about that. Yeah, we left that behind.
It's a pretty small detail to each.
Yeah, wherein Blackjack is suddenly and kind of inexplicably offended by slavery.
Yes, despite living in a slaver regime, basically, like despite being an out and out fash in a that came from a stable in which like slavery was the norm.
Slavery and cannibalism, both just sort of facts of life for her entire existence.
Who knows? Maybe it's because she couldn't handle the idea of non-gendered slavery, and that was the part that offended her.
Maybe.
Like I'm fine with you having these breeders, but you slaved women? How dare you? That's the only thing that really comes to mind. So, on to chapter 8. Chapter 8 is The Long Road? Or The Long Roads? It's the name escapes me. Long Roads. We immediately open up with Blackjack and crew escaping from the Mega Mart, since now the bounty's on their head and they now can't really enter the Mega Mart or exit it safely without, like, people waiting at the door ready to claim the bounty.
Again, a really shittily designed Elysium. Like, that's...
Yeah, it's really, really stupid that that's the case. Like, it makes no sense other than, like fuck them, I guess. But what's even the point if someone... Like, what is even the point of going to a Megamar that's supposed to be neutral territory if, like, the front gate isn't protected, really?
Yeah, typically, historically, and even in fiction that employs a concept like this, there is a radius... There's a broad radius wherein it is very easy to slip in and out into the neutral zone because it's the entire point.
Yes. BJ and crew are under disguise again, which is just a consistent way they solve pretty much every problem in the early chapters. It's another opportunity to make fun of BJ's incredibly small horn size, which again is a metaphorical penis joke thing. And I said in episode one, I'm going to bring them up every time they come up because they're really annoying. It also makes really bizarre allusions to BJ's lack of sexual prowess, which is a really odd thing, like, not to get too into it, I guess, because there will be, like, some conversations that'll have to be had about pony sex. BJ is bizarrely treated as being very virginal, despite, like, being simultaneously, like, promiscuous and pretty, like, polyamorous. So, like, because she has to be a fail son and, like, a social reject and, like, so that the audience can, like, identify with her, despite being, like, polyamorous and having multiple partners over her lifetime, she's also, like, terrible at sex, which is odd. I think it just comes from the thinking of a person who, like, still needs the protagonist to be, like, in their mind likable, and that likability is, like, contingent on her also being, like, a failure at everything that isn't cool. In their mind. And so, yeah, I don't know. It's brought up a number of times in later chapters, but, you know, I just figured this is the first evidence of BJ being bad at everything.
Except murder.
She's real good at killing people. But anyways, we get a little bit more lore dumpage here and there as they're, like, leaving with, like, some other ponies that were helping them get through in disguise, including Cash Money. It's where we learn that the Reapers have a long-standing rivalry with the Steel Rangers, and the Steel Rangers being a group of, like, really militarized ponies who seem to be taking all the guns and all the ammo in the hoof under their control, and they live inside of a, like, decommissioned naval base and ship that's been, like, anchored to the facility. And we get, like, a little, like, Chekhov's gun, like, in a literal case, I guess, whatever, this wasn't a pun, this was just a point I was making, the ship is fairly operational, and if they could get the guns working, like, it would be, like, pose a potential threat to the rest of the waste, which is, like, a big Chekhov's gun for things that happen later, so stay tuned. It's revealed that Glory went ahead of them because, like, the danger of them disguised, like, it would be hard to disguise all of them and move them through because they were looking for specifically three ponies, one being Earth, one being Unicorn, and one being Pegasi, so, like, the group would look suspicious otherwise. And they find that Glory has set up in the donut shop where all the raiders were from, like, a couple chapters ago where they killed all of them. And when they go in there, they notice that the whole of the inside of the building has been, like, mysteriously cleaned. Like, it's pretty spotless on the inside, which is odd given, you know, raiders and their proclivity to, like, leave open corpses everywhere. And that's when we find Glory, who's been doing science on some pony heads. And she discovers the thing that I mentioned last chapter, that, in fact, it's probably a disease that's eating into their brain and making them crazy. That the raiders are affected by.
Which is a thing that I didn't mention last week when it was brought up, that, like, they're the most militarily powerful faction, in spite of, like,
yeah,
they're all literally rabid. They all have, like, 48 days later rage. And so somehow, in spite of this, they're able to overcome every other faction, who are capable of the two most important aspects of an army, which is discipline and guile.
Yes, somehow. Well, that's always the strange thing about the Reapers, is that the Reapers are, like, so there's also kind of an explanation here that, like, the highest echelons, like the highest executive branches of the Reapers, and this is an idea that gets dropped, but it's brought up in this chapter, and, like, I guess Sombra just, like, didn't want to do this anymore, but it's stated that, like, the highest echelons of the Reapers all have cybernetic enhancements like Deus. Like, Deus is not supposed to be unique, and that, like, Big Daddy is supposed to be just as cybered, if not more so. And this idea just gets completely dropped after this point is made. Like, in later on, Sombra just wanted the Reapers to be, like, a cavalcade of the best, and didn't want them to just be all cybered up. This is where, like, we get a lot of weird, like, Sombra backfilling and rewriting the kit, like, stuff on the fly to, like, suit later things, which is, like, totally valid, because it's a fan fiction, and, like, you can't really go back and
edit. You don't have access to an eraser.
You just kind of... Sorry?
You don't have access to an eraser. Like, it's in.
They have this small discussion about the Raider disease stuff, and they, this is also, it's not really a big deal, but I just wanted to, like, because, like, I said I was going to mention this a bunch before, that every time Blackjack gets something new amended to her outfit, and it's revealed that, like, because they cleared out those Raiders, cash money, and her finders decided to reward BJ with, like, an armor upgrade, so, like, her clothing is much more better than just stable protective barding, but it also, they sewed the little, like, crusader patch that she found from the dead crusaders from the previous chapter onto her outfit. Sorry.
Well, that's bad. Like, that is an awful thing to do for a lot of reasons. Like, that's
yeah.
That's some other faction's colors, for one thing.
Yeah. The excuse they give is that nobody cares about the Crusaders, so it's fine. Which, why even have a faction system if one of your factions just, like, doesn't matter?
Well, I mean, in that case, like, okay, that seems like an intentionally hostile thing to do. Like, hey, you know this reminder of, like, that super trauma you had? It's also, like, a really embarrassing symbol for a faction that's not taken seriously. They're going to associate you with that forever.
Yeah, you get to wear this too.
Yeah,
I never really thought about that. That's also, actually kind of, like,
also another
weirdly
bullshit.
Backhanded.
Okay, we don't have the, like, money on hand to pay you for the job that, like, was posted. Like, there's a clear fucking contract that, like, do the thing, get the money. But we don't actually have the money on hand. There's been a bank run or something. So instead, we're just going to give you equipment of equal value. But we need the money, yes, for, like, a larger goal. That we're going to give you equipment of equal value.
That's some pure capitalistic intention, isn't it?
Which kind of smacks of company store, like, especially in regards to, like, the fact that cash money wants her around to do, like, deniable asset jobs for her. So, like, mm-hmm, instead of giving you the money to do the thing that you want to do, which would mean that you might leave and stop doing, like, the things we want you to do, instead we're going to pay you an equipment to make you a more effective asset to do the things we want you to do.
Then the story gets to stop dead in its tracks again, because the Murray Orb that they found in the campgrounds really early on, they decide that BJ wants to finally use it now. We get a flashback time reveal of from the she's in the body of another pony, and she seems to be romantically connected to Big Macintosh, who I talked about before in previous chapters. Which this that statement I'm about to that I just said is going to come up a lot. Big Macintosh was the big war hero of the war, and this is someone that he was like romantically attracted interested in. And they talk about plans about being married and like revealing to the family because like she was kind of hidden from the rest of the from the like the Apple family for whatever reason. It reveals her name to be Mary Pony. She reveals in her head that she's pregnant with his child. This is part of an incredibly insane side plot that ruins not only this character, not only Big Mac, but the entire cast. This is a side plot that ruins Blackjack. Irredeemably damages all of her built-up character up to this point. When it's revealed how this comes up, like what this side plot actually is, and it's baffling. Like I've multiple times I've tried to figure out what is actually the shark jump open of this series. Like what is the thing that happens that makes this irredeemable? And it might be this. It might be the conclusion of this side plot. So look forward to that. A pregnancy, a baby might have killed this whole story.
Oh, okay.
Then when she comes back out of it, it like fast forwards to them traveling on the road again because they're now the plan is they're now heading up north to go to a place called Brimstone's Fall, which is a massive slaver mining camp that just so happens that Ursary, Cash Money's sister, has control of, so they're wanting to damage her like slave mining production. So they wander up to an area that is like was part of the front line of the battles that happened between Equestria and the Zebras. I have no idea why it's so close to a city, but fuck it. When they get there, they hear some gunfires go off, and they find out that some Crusaders have been like hidden into a foxhole by a bunch of merchants who blame a bunch of their livestock being killed on the Crusaders. And because, you know, the Crusaders and Blackjack has survivor's guilt over Scoodle, she tries to help the next, like, these little batch of Crusaders, makes the argument that it probably wasn't them because there's no way they could eat three whole cows by themselves. So that little town pisses, like, the little group of merchants piss off. They're introduced to the Crusaders that are all musically named in their theming, and I didn't even bother to write them down. They're that inconsequential. They're just more Crusaders to backfill more of the stuff. They reveal that what probably did it was some mutated up dragons, as the phrasing was, because of course, since they're children, one of them talks in the bizarre listening way that children do in fiction, of like the Oliver Twist kind of way. So they make the decision to go deal with these dragons since they're a nuisance in the area. We then get a whole part that I kind of just get to skip where they fight dragons for a while. They fight really big ones, and they're all radioactive and exposes Blackjack to a bunch of radiation. They fight them, they kill them, they crush them with a giant rock. The town that wanted to help them have turned on them because they realize that BJ is the security mayor and that she has the bounty on her head. But she threatens, she basically like wins their favor through the power of murdering those dragons, and the only real value of this is she gets some cool sunglasses that she wears for the Like, this is paragraphs and paragraphs of the story that basically could be chalked up to BJ helps some children, kills dragons, gets sunglasses. This is why I wanted to cut through a lot of this stuff. Because, like, oh boy, I've said this doesn't matter, but this has never mattered less. they have some conversations, and it turns out that the name of the area the name of the town that the slavers all come from is a place called Paradise, which is a mall that's been converted into a slaving town. But it has its own radio station that they said to listen to, and we get a different radio DJ for once in one of these fics, a DJ by the name of Redbeard, and he is the most cliched conservative pundit, like Alex Jones style, ridiculous, like non-truth, opinion nonsense. Because it turns out that the people, those slavers he was fighting came from Blackjack from the last chapter was fighting, came from here, and he spins it as if they were just doing normal pony things and not moving slaves from one location to the other. But that doesn't really matter, because whatever, he's just a talking head. What gets shitty about this is that then Blackjack and the crew have a conversation about slavery, and it's framed as if slavery is just a job in the wasteland that you can do, and that, like, she doesn't like slavers, but she also doesn't, like,
comprehend what the moral injury is in the first place, like...
Yeah.
She had the whole, like, crying blood in the rain, shooting, like, two guns in the air over this, like, what is her objection? Like...
it's such whiplash, isn't it? Like, it, you actually, like, it's, you strain to figure out what the fuck this was meant to be, but it's also tied into, like, the stupid thing of, like, the bounty. Like, that's what it's leading up to, is them talking about, like, I don't, like, it's like, oh, I'm gonna protect myself, but I also, like, don't hate them for wanting to kill me for my bounty that's, like, being backed by slavers. Because it also reveals in this too that, like, Ursary, because of the slavers being taken down, decided to, like, match Deos's bounty, so, like, BJ now has 100,000 caps on her, so 10 times what the cost of her unlocking the Maltese EXE, just for a frame of reference. And the shittiest thing is that even 21, the stud who is always right, who would have every reason to hate slavers, still kind of concede that it's probably not a great idea to just kill ponies because they're doing something evil. Like, it's such a moment where the whole story stops for the author to, like, lean on a chair and goes, like, hey kids, slavery's not actually that bad. And then all the other characters just nod their head in agreement. It's a
Are the stud who's always right, like, makes the case that, like, slavery isn't all that bad?
Yeah. Well, it's bad, but it's slavery... Hey,
the nay word just means ignorant person.
Well, it's like, hey, slavery's bad, but you know what? Slavers also have families, too. Shouldn't we think about them?
What? Look, just because... they're born into slave money and, like, perpetuate a system of chattel and abuse. Okay. Fuck.
Yeah. It's real bad, isn't it? But anyways, we're almost done this chapter for this week, and then we can move into the one that actually has the meat on it. BJ has some horrible nightmares in a dream sequence, because we just kind of, like, fast forward to them at the night, and... she wakes up to Glory having the most expository recording session I've ever seen. Like, she's recording into a device to, like, because she's, like, recording all of her findings of, like, the disease as well into a recording device. She can pass under superiors whenever that becomes available. But she mentions that, like, she thinks BJ's crazy and stuff, but, like, the way the tone of the way it's written is might as well be saying, like, the author might as well be directly saying, like, BJ's really odd and contradictory. She's super bipolar. She wants to help people but kill people in the same breath. Like, oh, isn't she so complicated and conflicted? And it's like, stop just having your characters literally tell the story. Like just let the story happen, Somber. Like I've been reading ahead a bunch, and like I'm constantly struck by this problem of, like, Somber, your story would be a lot better if you didn't have if you just trusted your audience to get the points you're trying to make. Like, characters constantly basically just go, man, that's real bad, and then launch into giant conversations about, like, the nature of the thing, when, like, the theme is there, Somber. You just have to let it sit there and percolate in their brains. Like, it doesn't... no, characters don't have to stop and talk about every fucking... detail this way to explain it to the audience. They're not that dumb. It's incredibly condescending to treat your viewership this way. Anyways, it turns out that those people that she got to back off from killing the dragons decided to make another run at getting BJ and the crew. She beats one of them to near death, and then they, like, defibrillate her back to life. And then they make a small nod that, like, we could kill you at any time, like, don't fuck with us. Like, Gloria makes the line of, like, she's being kind, like, let her be kind. Like, let her let you off the hook this once. But then Gloria has a minor tiff because she realizes that, like, BJ knew they were coming because, like, the pep buck can, like, sense enemies. And she wanted everyone to be asleep so that she could deal with them by herself. And Gloria's basically like, hey, it's fucked up that you wanted to do this by yourself and not let your friends help. Which, I mean, is valid. Like, that's totally fair. BJ's developing a martyr complex and Gloria's like, hey, maybe don't.
But also, wait a minute. Actually, those two assholes only exist to, like, guilt trip her and, like, our baggage.
Mm-hmm.
That their baggage. Like, why would she... Why, in fact, would she want to, like, keep them around?
Yeah. No, they're utterly dependent on BJ to do anything because they have no drive themselves. Fuck. Okay, I guess to talk about IRL shit really, really, really fast, I troll the Fall Equestria Reddit every once in a while because I hate myself, and I found a thread where someone was like, what if Blackjack, like, died? And, like, what would the story be like if Glory or 21 picked up the reins and did the rest of the story? And, like, I couldn't help but be struck by, like, this story doesn't work without BJ because, like, the other two characters are so, like, passive and incapable of doing anything that, like, the story is concocted a way where they need BJ to be a violent murderer because the other characters are just so soft and pacifistic. So the answer would be the story would just end right there and then. Like, there's no way it can continue on. Anywho, I guess that's our, like, mid-episode break. You should pause the episode. Like, we got through that chapter real fast thinking about it. But, you know, get yourself a snack, go out to the lobby, get yourself a drink, consider what you're doing with your life listening to this podcast. Consider going on for a run. If you might be running while you're listening to this podcast, but, you know, consider doing it. Get some exercise. Drink some more water. Have a nap. Do something creative. I don't know. We open up with... We then move on to Chapter 9, which name completely eludes me, and I kind of just, like... God. Stone. That's the name of the episode, because they're going to a quarry. God, just thinking about the fact that, like, that chapter had the least happening into it so far. Like, nothing happened in that chapter. They fought dragons, but that was entirely skippable. It has no larger implication on the story.
Well, I mean, I'm sure the sunglasses will factor in, and then... profoundly important way. Like, the story will turn on that addition.
It'll hinge on the sunglasses. She'll take a bullet and it'll clink off the sunglasses.
Everyone else is blinded but her, due to the sweet dragon shades.
But yeah, we open up with Chapter 9 Stone, with, like, mostly a recap of the events that had happened so far. Like, it's more BJ bullying herself for, like, actions she couldn't have possibly prevented. She sort of recaps her, like, experiences and feelings with 21 and Glory. So I could just skip all that, which is awesome. We then, like, snap cut, because there's no explanation of how they got to, like, a library or school. It's sort of confusing. But, like, the school is all filled with, like, programmed robots who they've tricked into thinking that they're children going to the school. So, like, they won't fight them. We find out a little bit more backstory fluff, that there are zebras who remain loyal to the equestrian cause. And to show their devotion and faith to the equestrian oppressive oligarchy, they used magic to permanently change their stripes from black to red, which is not important except for an aesthetic choice, and also the kind of worrying idea of, like, culture traitors who went out of their way to, like, completely disavow their own people, integrate within society better, and even then they still, like... To do that, they had to become, like, garish freaks of their own species to do so before people would trust them, which is kind of racist. Like, the idea that, like, you can't tell two zebras apart, so they had to dye their stripes red so that you could figure it out.
Well, I'm reminded of, I can't remember the name of the movie. Which is perfectly fine because you shouldn't even look it up. It's real bad. It's Steven Spielberg's worst movie.
Which is impressive.
It's a World War II movie, and it's basically a wacky comedy about the home front, and one of the gags is a character opens the trunk of his car and pulls out an image that is an actual piece of World War II American wartime propaganda of know your ally from your enemy. Distinctive features that signify the difference between a chink and a jap.
Oh boy, that's dire. Would that be like 1941 or whatever?
Yes.
42. Yeah. That movie's awful. Maybe one of the worst movies ever made. That isn't like The Room. Like not something that wasn't made by like a small independent group. Like people with money made like the worst movie ever. But yeah, don't look it up. It's unwatchably bad. Like in the way that the way that PH. Like, Project Horizons is unreadably bad. Like, I would never recommend this to anyone, even for jokes. Like, even for laughs. This isn't bad enough to be fun. It's just oppressive and mean. It's sort of the same problem.
It's also, we're going on a pretty big tangent here, but, like, one final fact about this film. Steven Spielberg noted that, I think it was his third major film, and the previous two were Jaws and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. And he noticed that there is a troubling trend with the three movies. When Jaws came out and he watched the audience, everyone had their hands over their eyes. When Close Encounters of the Third Kind came out, everyone had their hands over their mouths. 1941 came out, everyone had their hands over their ears.
Well, at least you got the three evils trifecta, so that's cool. At least you can claim that. But yeah, I guess we should actually get into this chapter. They're hanging out in a library and they're learning factoids of the backstory. We get a description of Brimstone's Fall, which should be awesome, but is like then just painted really lamely. It's a diamond mine where it was a gemstone mine, and gemstones are used to power everything in the setting, so it was really critical that a dragon was murdered and fell on top of, but then like the description of it is just like, oh, it's just like a lame hole, and it's like, how did you make that boring? Like, like in a single line of description, it's like in my brain, I was ready for like, oh, it's this like super rad post-apocalyptic mind zone that like this skeleton, like this radioactive skeleton of a dragon is sitting on top of it. It's like, oh no, it's just like a hole that's blown in the rock. And it's like, you let me down again, Somber. I expected nothing, and even then I was let down. I can't believe it. You did it again.
A legend.
He's a legend in letting me down. But anyways, they spy it from the library since it has a clear view of it, and they have some conversations with the Crusaders about the structure of the slavers and how it works, and it's being run like it's being protected by a gang of like local thugs that are basically like cool cowboy ponies who also wear leather jackets, so they're kind of all over the place aesthetically. Blackjack gets the great, fantastic, stupid idea of disguising herself again, which admittedly it's worked every time so far, so why not just keep doing it? So they have 21, who's apparently really good at stealth, go and steal some of their clothes, and while that's happening, BJ gets a sort of preternatural, like, you know, pinprick on the back of her head feel that she's being watched, and she calls the bluff of a figure that's sitting in the room with them, and he Zebra decloaks itself from invisibility in the room, and they have a mild conversation with him, and he's part of something known as the Zebra Remnant, or like the Remnant of the Legion, which are the zebras who are alive in the post-apocalypse that still carry the faith and believe in the war. Like, they believe the war never really truly ended. They have a small tussle where BJ beats him with a desk, and then they decide that he's useful for the situation because among the slaves there are a bunch of zebra slaves, so he agrees to help them save the slavers from the slavers for that reason. And he's a good shot with a sniper rifle and is also can turn invisible, so that doesn't hurt either. I have a section in here where he asks if they serve the stars, which I put a point in here to talk potentially about zebra religion, which is another one of those, like, incredibly complicated lore additions that, like, don't really matter to the story broadly, but, like, they're critical for the decision-making of certain characters, but, like, basically, like, so to talk about sort of the inherent weird racism of the war in the story that's in both stories. So instead of this just being a physical war over resources, it's also a religious war, because the zebras believe the stars, like the physical stars themselves, are evil, and they believe that because, like, Luna, the, like, younger sister of the two equestrian princesses, became, like, the evil nightmare moon from the original show, and, like, she was, like, an evil star celestial pony, and she now runs the country, that gave them, like, religious cause to go to war with Equestria, which is problematic on a lot of ways, because, like, I get that these people don't really know, clearly don't know a ton about, like, the, like, actual reasons why the Cold War happened, and therefore, like, know very little about, like, the actual thing that, like, happened in Fallout. They don't understand that, like, they kind of, like, equate zebras closer to, like, sort of Islam, I guess, would be the closest thing. Like, their frame of reference is much closer to, like Muslim extremists in the way that they believe, like, the way they handle the idea of, like, a militant faction trying to fight them, which actually explains a whole bunch of things in the story, because there's a ton of, like, examples of bombings and blowing up significant cities, which is kind of there to mirror stuff that happened, like, especially 9/11, obviously. And, like, it's kind of like, the story's deep into the soup, so, like, it has the problem of not really thinking too critically on, like, the implications of a lot of these decisions, and zebras are really just there to be, like, an antagonistic force, but, like,
apocalyptic war is justified because our enemies were irrational.
Yes. Yeah, but I think that was what I was trying to, like, get to.
Yep. Well, then I said it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not great. It's real not great. Anyways, to get into the modern era of this story, on their way in disguise to go to meet up with this gang called the Pecos, they end up saving a pair of them from, like, a rad scorpion that conveniently shows up in the story for them to save them from. And they save a pony. They save a pair of ponies named Dusty Trails and Sidewinder, I think, or Twister or whatever. It doesn't matter. Dusty Trails is the only one that matters of these two. There's some higher ups in this little gang. Like, they're the heads of this gang. They play some poker, and they make an offer to her that, like, for the gang to scatter while the slavers are being wiped out, because they don't like the slavers, because, like, they just don't. But they pay good in protection money, so they're helping them sneak into the mine, because at the same time, Dusty Trails convinced the Pecos that, like, the security mayor is off in some other place, and most of their forces get sent out. And they have a skeleton crew, so it's just the slavers mostly. They sneak into the mine. They beat up some guards. Some guards get shot. They interrogate one of them over, like, the operations, and one of them coughs out that, like, some kind of crazy evil monster pony named Gorgon is controlling the area, and he's another Reaper. He's in fact another one of the four horses of the apocalypse, which the highest executive branches. He's up there with Deus. And he's supposed to be some sort of crazy monster pony who's basically bulletproof, super strong, can fly, and also he can turn anyone into stone that he looks at. Find something funny there?
The can fly part is what's really tickling me. Like sure, Cyborg Gorgon, whatever, but, like, the can fly. This is my bad guy. He's super strong. You can't be hurt. He can turn people to stone, and he can fly.
He is the coolest. Here, I drew a picture of him. His name is Gorgon. He is my friend. But yeah, but but with oh man, oh, we're gonna get giggly. With the skeleton crew of the slavers, they manage to sneak into the mine proper. And they take out the rest of the, like, slavers there. And then we just kind of have, like, a Dark Soulsian style boss fight happen. Like, Gorgon, like, shows up amongst the all of the mining gear, and they have a big old fight with him. It goes for a long time. Everyone gets turned to stone except for Blackjack, because she bluffs that
the shades.
I wish. Actually, that would have been. No, that's the thing. That's the thing. Like, no. Never not be disappointed in Sombra. He drops every idea. I didn't even think about the shades.
My headcanon is that somebody else like P21 had them and like put them like, don't worry guys, flip.
He's just got petrification sounds. Yeah, 21 just looks like a cool statue. But BJ bluffs the data would die along with her if she gets turned to stone, so Gorgon loses his big advantage, but he's luckily still fairly bulletproof, so they really can't, like, kill him. This fight goes on for a long, boring time until they just feed him into a rock crusher, which is, I mean, a good way to kill someone. Oh, Christ. Then as they escape, as they're leaving the facility after they've taken out Gorgon, the slavers all realize what's happened because of the lot of salt that they made on it. But the rest of the slavers get taken out by the last remaining of the Pecos that are under Dusty Trail's wash, and they kind of just, like, set their hats to each other and, like, yeah, we did good. We took out a bunch of slavers. And then we get a really abrupt end because they open up the trains that were full of slaves, and they save a bunch of the zebras. And then, God, I forgot to say his name. The character's name is Lancer. It's not important, but he goes, psych, I was playing the long con, and shoots Blackjack through the chest and then shoots the rest of the zebras and then disappears and nopes out of the story. Because apparently they were traitors to the remnant. And the whole reason why he wanted to save them was so that he could execute them personally. But yeah, and then our chapter abruptly ends with Blackjack blacking out because she now has a sniper round lodged deep into her chest. So that's her fucking chapter. That's her episode for the week. Weird, yeah. You got any notes for me?
I have notes for our audience, which is that we need notes. Give us notes. Give us your feedback. Give us your validation. Crave your validation. Give us stars. Give us thumbs up. Seriously, like I feel like I'm suffering from karmic retribution for all the times that I haven't done the extremely easy thing of putting stars on a iTunes review. Whatever rating mechanism of whatever way you're listening to this, please contribute. Say what you liked, tell us what you didn't like, help us refine our product.
If we have Twitters that we could plug, we'd probably plug those. We should get on that TBH. But yeah, we should actually, like, that's actually a thing. Like, we should try and set up a mailbag and see if we can get people to, like, send us mail on, like, what they think of the story so far, and to answer questions that I forgot to answer like 20 episodes ago.
The only note that's coming to mind is that because I refuse to, like, consider, so like this episode's been so horrible, I can't even joke, can't even, like, confront it. And so I am instead fixated on those damn sunglasses and how they really should have been the deciding factor against a Gorgon.
Yeah, it should have been what fixed it. Like, you do check, you set up the Chekhov's gun of introducing him in the chapter previous, and then the payoff doesn't happen. It's just, like, Somber just was like, luckily, so what it actually is, you know how, like, a couple chapters ago, I explained that when she's irradiated, her eyes glow. She's wearing the sunglasses. People can't tell that her eyes are glowing. That's the reason why that's in there.
That is the sole fuck. God damn it. He's Fi. I'm Sir Weirdington Esquire, and this has all been a terrible mistake.